Hey everybody, welcome to the Balance Boss Podcast. I am your host, Lauren Zoller, and today's guest is Barbara Majeski. Barbara was a married stay-at-home mom, raising her three kids in the suburbs of New Jersey, working diligently to check all of the boxes of what she believed it meant to live a good life. Keeping fit with 5 a.m. runs that wouldn't interfere with her commitment to being a loyal wife, dedicated mom, and an active member of the community. Class mom, philanthropy chair, and an organic food buying expert. Check, check, and check. The right clothes, right shoes, and the right BMI. Triple check. Then in the summer of 2015, things began to unravel. Seemingly out of the blue, Barbara's marriage to the man that she thought to be her prince came to a devastating end. With her self-esteem shattered and her future uncertain, she began to reassess her life. In the midst of grappling with her new reality, Barbara was handed a stage 3 cancer diagnosis. Her imminent divorce would have to wait as cancer took center stage. During treatment, Barbara vowed that if she beat cancer and got another shot at life, that she would live bigger, better, and bolder with greater purpose, meaning, and intent. Determined that if given the chance, she would no longer define happiness by a mythical metrics of perfection, but instead explore and redefine what it means to live a good life. After 2 years of treatment and recovery, she ended her marriage, began pursuing her dream career in media, and launched an online community united in personal growth, purpose, and authenticity. I'm so excited to have Barbara on the show. She has everything that we speak about and believe in here on the Balance Boss Podcast, and I'm so excited for you all to learn from her. Without further ado, let's jump right in.
Welcome to the Balanced Boss Podcast, where we discuss how to live abundantly in all areas of your life. Here is your host and work-life balance coach, Lauren Zola.
Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lauren. So great to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you. So I always start the Balance Boss Podcast with an intention setting. I'm a firm believer in state change and being able to state the way that you want to feel for a desired outcome. So I'm actually going to hand that over to you today and have you set an intention for how you want the listeners to feel as they listen to our conversation today, or what you want them to take away as a result of our conversation today.
Great. I think that's a really great way to not only start a conversation, but also start your day. And when I do podcasts, really my intention is to share my story in hopes of giving people hope and aspirations for their own journey. And more than anything, to help them get out of their own way to live their best life. So that's really my intention for this conversation today, is just to inspire people to get out of their own way and go for the good life.
I love it. I feel like that's my mantra that I live every day by.
Yes. And we all get in our own way, really. It's just a universal thing. We're all like, I'm not worthy and I can't do this and I can't do that. And I love sharing, you know, my own bump up against mortality through cancer to help others. Like, you don't need to be handed a cancer diagnosis to realize that you get one shot at this. Go for it. Don't allow things to scare you off. Like, it's okay. So yeah, I love these conversations.
Awesome. So can you tell us a little bit about your story? Because I know that it's so inspiring. And I personally know a lot about your story, just, you know, from what I've gathered and read before, but can you tell the listeners a little bit about where you are and how you got to be where you are right now?
Sure. So honestly, this story really starts, you know, I'm actually one of four kids. I'm a twin, although my parents didn't know they were having twins until out came my twin brother. So I was an only child for 4 glorious minutes. I have younger twin brothers as well. So I'm one of 2 sets of twins. And yeah, my mom's a triplet. So it turns out multiples run in our family, as does colon cancer. So, you know, I am a stage 3 colon cancer survivor. I was diagnosed at 42 years old. My kids were 12 and 10, and then my daughter was 4 when I was diagnosed. So I was very young, and it was late stage 3. So I had a real head-on collision, and I really had to come toe-to-toe, face-to-face with my own mortality in my early 40s, which kind of brings us where we are today, which is actually 5 years later. But prior to all of that, I had, in my 20s, I had launched a sales company, and I was pretty successful, you know, at that. And I think the driving force behind that sales company was I always wanted to take care of my younger brother with special needs. And I had made a vow when I was in my teens that I would always take care of him. I knew I was his caretaker. I knew it was my role in the world to look out for him. I cannot explain why, and I cannot really articulate it. It was just something that I always kind of was part of who I was, what I was supposed to do. So when I got out of college, I just really felt like I needed to, you know, go into something where I could make money. And when you want to make money, you go into sales. You need to be an entrepreneur. If you want to make money, you better find a sale, right? Am I wrong on that
board? No, you're so right.
You want to make money? If anybody's like, how do I make money? I'm going to say, go into sales. Goodbye. Call you later. I just answered everybody's question. Gee, I need to make more money. Great. Go find a sales job and go work on straight commission and figure it out. There you go. Goodbye. Done. The book is over. So that's kind of what I put myself into was, okay, well, you know, the only way to, I didn't want to be in a space where I had a salary, believe it or not. Like, a salary was very safe and very comfortable, but it also wouldn't allow me to take care of my brother. So I had to find a path where if I was going to work hard, I would make money. So I put myself, this is crazy. Like, Lauren, I look back at this, I'm like, who does that? Crazy. I put myself in an all commission-based job in my 20s, living on my own. I mean, I don't know if I would have that kind of, you know, chutzpah at this point, but yeah, I did. And I ended up doing really well. I do believe, and I know that the reason for it is in the back of my mind, whether it was always, you know, conscious or unconscious, I always wanted to take care of Stephen, and my fear of him being institutionalized, you know, always led me to higher ground of like, figure it out. Don't quit. Yeah. Who knows the answers? Find the answers, read the answers, study the, like crazy lady kind of thing. So that was my 20s. I had done very, very well for myself, made money and ran my own business, helped other people to do well, the whole nine yards. So by the time I was 29, I actually, you know, or 30, I'm sorry, 30, I'd put myself in a position where I could take over as his legal guardian. He still lives with my parents. I don't want to over promote my fabulousness, but he still lives with my parents, but I am technically his legal guardian. And I help financially and, you know, anything I can do to help take care of Stephen, I do, you know, whether it's getting him an adult daycare program or, you know, take care of anything. I mean, he's just everything to me. So I took over for that, and I actually retired and became a stay-at-home mother.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and what I love about your audience and what your podcast is talking about is like just balance and doing, you know, we want to do it all. And I grew up with Claire Huxtable, you know, this woman, and she had like five kids, and she was an attorney, and she had a clean house and no nanny. And I don't know, like, I grew up with Claire Huxtable. We were all screwed. Like, anybody in my generation, I know that there's like 30 and up here, but so I'm 47. I'm probably a smidge older than everyone else. But Claire Huxtable was this woman. She was married to Bill Cosby in the show back before he was a dirty dog. Or I guess he wasn't. We'll just breeze over that part to get to the Claire Huxtable. I was just raised to believe you could have it all, and you could have it all at once. And I think as I was kind of like trying to run this big sales career and have a family, I was like, I didn't really think the Claire Huxtable thing exists. And I don't think that's true, because we all only get 24 hours in a day. And just because we've done good deeds doesn't mean they give us a 25th hour. So, you know, I'm like, this is just really impossible. So, you know, as your listeners are listening, we all have these kind of delusional aspirations of we can have it all. I kind of want to just burst a little bit of a bubble and say, you can have it all. You just can't have it all at once.
Yes.
And there is no such thing as, in my book, this is me and my little opinion and my big mouth, is I think there's a work-life blend. Balance, there is, if you're looking for that, and everybody gets equal amount of attention, and your kids get their sandwiches cut and little stars every day, and you're in the board meeting leaning in every day. I mean, it's bullshit. It's bullshit. You can't cut your kids' sandwiches into stars and also lean in board meetings. Something's got to give. Like, you're, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true.
It's so true. So stop, stop. You're not going to do that. You're not going to put little notes in your kids' lunch boxes and then jet off to a meeting, because that means you're waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's just, why put yourself into these situations that are unobtainable? Your kids want to see that you're happy if you're a parent or, you know, whatever. Your people want to see you happy and enjoying life and doing well in all areas. And it's not always about cutting your little sandwiches into, you know, little stars. Although God bless you if you can do that every day. You're not listening to a mother that does. So I guess, you know, you asked about my story. So fast forward, I was a stay-at-home mom, 3 kids, doing my thing, checking all the boxes, waking up at 5 a.m. to do my run so I can stay fit, and la, 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 running the New York Marathon. And you know, my, you know, I just was trying to keep up. I'm trying to, you know, have this really, I think in retrospect, I had a very veneered life. On the outside, it looked really great. But inside, it was really a mixed bag of, you know, feeling unworthy and feeling like falling short and like in search of happiness and fulfillment. And I was really insecure. And I felt like I was, I actually, in retrospect, I'll say, I think I was shortchanging my friendships because I was so busy really living up to the bullshit veneer I was really crafting, that I don't think I was really truly myself. Now, during that time, I also like, you know, I was like on any philanthropy board, anybody asked me, I said no to nothing. I was like all over the place. But I also launched a philanthropy initiative that I am super proud of, and I'm glad that I did, for Operation Smile. And in 2015, I was recognized with a humanitarian award that I was proud of. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, I'll explain in a minute. But, you know, I just was really just unfulfilled. That part of my life, like giving back, I think really did fulfill me and make me happy. But unfortunately, as I was kind of trying to find, I don't know, I just trying to find it all and be the all and be the Claire Huxtable of the, you know, of the what, 21st century, my marriage was failing, and I did not know. It came to a real screeching, ugly, devastating heartbreak in the summer of 2015. So I'd gotten that great humanitarian award, and I was really riding high from that, because I'd worked really hard to leverage my business contacts and like champion this philanthropy that I was really, this global philanthropy that I was really, really proud of. And it ended up doing really well. And I, in 2015, before my marriage fell apart, I also had done a Holocaust survivor event that honestly, to the end of my days, will probably be like one of the, like, I don't know, there was nothing like honoring living Holocaust survivors that night. So that was really just, I enjoyed giving back and acknowledging other people, but I guess it came, I don't know if it didn't end my marriage. My marriage ended on its own. So my marriage crashed and burned in the summer of 2015. And then 3 months later, I was handed a stage 3 cancer diagnosis. So I remember being in the doctor's office, and you'll love this, I'm like, they're like, you have cancer. And I was like, well, yeah, no. Yeah, that's really cute that you think that I have cancer, because I can't, because my marriage is in the shitter.
Yeah.
I have never been thinner because my marriage is in, you know, has completely fallen apart. So I'm like, and I just ran the New York City Marathon. Like,
I'm the healthiest, yeah, right. I'm the healthiest person in the world. Like,
do you see me? And you know, but anyway. Colon cancer does run in my family. My father had it. So at 42, I was fortunate because I was diagnosed prior to it going any further. But after I had surgery, they had realized it was in my lymph nodes, and it had permeated the intestinal wall. So I always say it was, the cancer was headed out to the mothership. So I had to have 6 months of chemo. And just to wrap up this story, because it is long, but when I was really sick, and I ended up being, the chemo really, I can't express to you how sick it made me. I just couldn't get my wits about me. And I thought when I was 4 months into the 6 month routine, I was so bad. Like just thinking about it, I really do have major PTSD from chemo. I thought, you know, I'm not gonna, this is it. My cancer is not gonna take me. Chemo is going to take me. So long story short, in the middle of chemo, I kind of came to this realization that all the things that I was most proud of, the things I was most proud of and I had kind of accomplished, I was always embedded in this understanding that I wanted to take care of my brother, Steven. Like anytime I wanted to quit running my own business or launching that philanthropy, that philanthropy initiative, or, even putting myself through college, anytime I wanted to quit, I was always like, well, if I quit, I can't take care of Steven. Or if I quit the philanthropy initiative, I can't help the Stevens of the world, those without a voice, you know, the people that don't have access to fundraising and initiatives and social change. So in that moment of realizing all of that, like I had all my really, you know, profound, my memories of what I wanted to be remembered by, it were all hinged on my taking care of Steven. It was in that moment I realized that it was never me taking care of Steven as much as it was Steven taking care of me. And in that like profound kind of like, whoa, that's like a lot of,
yeah, that's big.
That's big. I kind of reset, you know, you talk about intention. I kind of reset my universal vow and my intention and my, I said, you know, listen, get me out of cancer and I'll use my voice to speak for others. I will continue to do my work, not only for Steven, but the Stevens of the world. Just get me, dear universe, get me out of this chemo.
Yeah.
You know, dear God, are you there, Margaret, or whatever that is? What is that? you know what I'm saying, Judy Blume or whatever. So that's kind of my story. And it really, I got out of cancer and, you know, I had to wrap up my marriage in an ugly little bow call that quits. And then I decided to go into media. I was like, well, if I need a bigger platform, bigger voice, I better go on TV. And you know, where you meet me today, you know, I do work on the Today Show and Good Day New York and whatever program. Yeah, when you turn on the TV, you might see my mug on the other side. That's my story.
I love it so much. And so I'm interested in knowing, because it sounded to me like when the cancer hit and you were having that huge realization, there was a shift in your why. Like there really was a deep internal shift that happened where you were rooted in something that was taking care of someone else, but that why then rooted back to, oh wow, I have to now take care of myself so that I can go out there
and take care of others. Oh, that's so good. Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, and take care of others.
You know, I think it's so important that you put your oxygen mask on first before you can take care of everyone else. Like you've got to take care of you. And so many people, we need to really have a shift in the paradigm of exercise and wellness and fitness and meditation and girls retreats and, you know, whatever it might be, because what you're doing when you step away from your role as a mother, as an executive, as a administrator, as a dental hygienist, and you take a step away from these titles and these roles to kind of feed your soul, whether it's exercise or whatever, you are putting your oxygen mask on and you are going to be better in all those areas of your life. And sometimes they're perceived, they're so miscalibrated. Like they're just, oh, look at you taking free time. Excuse me? Like,
yeah.
I have that. And I used to put my oxygen mask on at 5 o'clock in the morning because it was when my kids were younger. Sometimes it truly is the only time you can really take care of you, you know? Mm-hmm. And I like love giving people that authority. Like I told you to check out from your kids and your job and your everything, and you go watch your Netflix and you like, it's okay to refuel. Like it's so embedded in us. If we're not doing that, we're falling short. And we need to reshift that. Like, you're not working out for your body. You're working out for your mind. You're working out for your cells. You're working out for your metabolism and your future. You're working out to be a grandparent so you can help your children's children down the line. And you don't take care of you, then you are no good to none of these labels and these roles. So yeah, I think you really did hit on a good point of like, well, I had to get through my cancer and take care of myself before I could, you know, go back and take care of others. And it's a little bit of both. I did learn in that, and there goes my emails, but I did learn in that experience of like, in that reflection, I will say, it's like the more you give, the more you get. Like, I just had this profound realization, like the more I kind of just gave, you know, was really like, no, I have to do this for this person. Let me take care of what's in their best interest. I had this thing that went through my head, and I think there's probably a lot of executives listening to this. When I was running my business and I ran, you know, hundreds of, I managed like a lot of salespeople, dozens of sales teams that embodied hundreds of salespeople. And I would always, people were like, how do I handle this situation? How do I handle this? How do I manage? How do I lead? How do I mentor? And the one thing that I kept going to was, okay, ask yourself before you engage in a conversation where maybe you have to terminate somebody or you have to give them tough love or they're not performing. Ask yourself this one question: what is in their best interest? And when you sit in that space of like, what is in their best interest and how can I help them? You are going to help yourself in the process. It's so that the whole paradigm of it can be so powerful. Think about it, Lauren, when you go to like terminate somebody and you're like, well, oh my God, I feel so bad. And they have kids and they have this and that, but you're probably letting them go because they also are not performing and they are not happy and they're not really, they're not producing because they're not passionate about where they're at. And I think when you come into that conversation of like, I know this is hard and I know it's hard no matter what, or you have to give somebody kind of directional, you know, cues because they're doing something stupid or, you know, not perform, whatever it may be, ask yourself that question. Ask yourself when you're dealing with your kids. You know, it's such a great way. And then you realize like your thoughts predicate your actions and your words. They're all really stemming from that conversation that started in your head. And when it starts with it in your head with a space of what is in their best interest? How can I help them? What is that? It's all of a sudden like this synergy. There's synergy. It's like you're not only helping yourself, but you're helping them. You know, it's very interesting. I don't know. I think that I became very the clarity on your experience in humanity became crystallized through my cancer. And you know, it's still, you know, it I love sharing it because I'm like, I think nobody needs to be confronted with your own mortality to have, you know, a deeper understanding of your role in humanity.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that what's so beautiful about your cancer journey too, is that there was almost this reinvention of who you were and how you were showing up in the world. And I firmly believe that if you can step into any sort of conversation, even going back to, you know, what you were talking about in a work situation, or let's say, you know, it's the end of a relationship and you can address that conversation, the end of something, with the mindset of, this is not, I'm actually letting this person find freedom to search out the next best thing that is right for them on their path.
Yeah.
Then it changes your entire look and view at how the world works and how you show up in the world. So I'm interested in knowing, because cancers, I firmly believe, and you know, I don't have personal experience with cancer in my own body, but I have a lot of friends who have battled cancer, who are currently battling cancer. And I feel like cancer is so much of, it's a lot of mindset. Lot of mindset shifts. And so I'm interested in knowing where did you begin with that? Because if you knew, you got to this place where it sounds like you knew that reinvention needed to happen and things needed to shift.
Yes.
What were kind of the catalysts for change that you had to work through in order to have that shift in your life and change your mindset?
Oh, that's such a great question, because I think this is going to resonate with so many people. The mindset that had to change and is a constant work in progress. I have yet to perfect it, but I will say I have made great strides. The mindset that I was not worthy had to be re-scripted, because I realized that life, there's a beginning and there's an end, and all you control is the dash in between the two numbers. 1973, dash, where does it end? I have no idea. Hopefully later and less, you know, but yeah. It's dash. It's the in between. And when you realize all of a sudden that dash might not be as long as you had hoped it would be, I better get to it. I have to stop with, I'm not worthy. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not witty enough. All this, I am not enough. I had to replace it and say, I am enough. I need to put it out there. I need to at least try. And I really came to a place of, I would rather fail trying than fail to try. And it really did move me in so many ways. I have this one story where I really wanted to be on TV. I love the Today Show. It goes on. It's on my background. It's in the back on TVs. My television naturally goes to NBC. I don't know why. I don't know. But Today Show has always been my thing. And actually I read the book, The Secret, 150 years ago. I swear to God, I'm like 400 years old. And in it, you're supposed to write down like what you want to manifest. And I was like, I want to be an anchor on the Today Show. Okay. I'm not an anchor on the Today Show yet, but I do love the Today Show. So I got to the end of cancer and I'm sitting there following people on Instagram. And I don't know, I'm like, you know, I don't know what's coming up. I write this woman's name down on a yellow piece of paper. I always have yellow notepads everywhere. I have total adult ADD and my office is a mess, but I write this woman's name down. Her name's Amy Rosenblum. She's on my Instagram. I don't know how I found her. I don't know what happened, but she keeps popping up and she's on like Wendy Williams and the Today Show and Good Day New York. But she's not on TV. She's behind the scenes, always putting people on TV. And I write her name down and then I find her phone number. And I had the old voice in my head, which was, you know, what are you going to call and say to her? Like, who are you like to say, you want to be on TV? And what are you going to, and who stalks people on Instagram? Like you're 40. I'm in my 40s. And, I just had her name written down. And then I asked, my husband, we'll call him the was at the time. He wasn't my husband or my ex. He was my was at the time. And I was like, will you call her for me? You know, we were in a good place for a little bit. And he's like, well, what am I going to call? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm scared. And I had to replace this voice with, oh, can I curse?
Of course. Go for it, girl.
I had to replace it with, fuck it. I was like, I'm going to call and say, I'm following you on Instagram. And you understand, like, I'm in my 40s. I was not raised on Instagram. We didn't have cell phones in my childhood. It was chalkboards and, you know, I don't know, Girl Scout cookies, door to door. I don't know. It's old school. And there I am. I'm like, hi, I follow you on Instagram. Like it was probably, I was so awkward about it. And she goes, and we start talking and she's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I don't know. While we're on the phone, she Googles me and it was my humanitarian work for Operation Smile that propagated and kind of highlighted what I had done while I was a stay-at-home mom. And she goes, you've done public speaking. She's like, I think we should meet. Anyway, it was, had I had my old voices, my pre-cancer voices of you're not worthy, you're not enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not like all this other stuff. I hadn't kind of abandoned it with fuck it and made the, I would have never made the call. I did. I replaced it with fuck it, I'm calling. And I really I would love to find a like classier word for my kind of transition. I just can't find it. Like if I'm just being real with everyone that's listening and really trying to help others get out of their own way and chart their own path and live their best life, I have to say that I replaced the negative words and the negative talk and that you're not enough with fuck it. And it works. So I think sometimes you just got to pick up the phone, make the call, make the connection, schedule the coffee, schedule the lunch, reach out, do the networking, try the podcast, try new things. You know, that's really what it came down to. I had to replace the dialogue in between my 2 years before I was ever going to manifest the things that I wanted. And what I wanted was to go on the stage show. And she led me, she didn't even put me on TVs in Van Buren, Arkansas. She's like, "You're great. Let's put you on the Today Show." I'm like, "Okay, we'll just go right to the front of the line, Amy Rosenblum. I'll just go straight." That literally, my first booking was on the Today Show. I look back, I'm like, she just had blind faith in this.
I love it.
Out of Princeton, New Jersey. So here we are today. Fuck it, right?
I love it. So you're going to love this. So I was on a podcast a few weeks ago and I have a motto and it's fuck it, ask big. And it's the same thing. It's when I first started this podcast, I remember there are three people that really pioneered me stepping into the coaching business. And those three people changed my life in a lot of ways. I've attended their seminars. I've read all of their books. And these three people, when I started my podcast, I was like, you know what? They have written multiple books. I'm like, I'm just going to fuck it. I'm just going to ask them and see if they'll be on the podcast. And every single one of them was like, sure, send me a link. Let's make it happen. And so that was where my motto came from. Fuck it, ask big. Because everything that has ever happened, and you just proved this so amazingly, that everything in life that is worth something has been stepping over that line of fear and just saying, fuck it, and doing it.
Yes. Oh my God. That is so funny. That is so funny. And I just wrote it down. I'm like, I know that's even better. Fuck it. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get out of your own way. You are the only person stopping you from getting what you want out of this lifetime.
So true.
It's nobody else. It's you and the conversation you're having with yourself. So tell yourself to fuck it, ass big. Yes.
I love it so much. We need to get t-shirts made with the, just start an entire line.
Yeah. Some trucker hats. I'm in.
I love it so much. So Barbara, tell me this, because this is the Balance Boss podcast. And this is just like the intention setting at the beginning, this is a question that I ask everyone that comes on the show, and it's always different every time I ask it. So I'm excited to ask it to you, but what are some of your, and it doesn't matter what it looks like, but what are some of your daily non-negotiable self-care items that you do to make sure that you stay grounded, not just at work, but also at home with your husband and your own health, with your friendships? What are your kind of daily go-tos?
Yeah. So, I'm no longer married, but, so the was-been.
Okay.
With my family, but I think it's a really great question regardless. Exercise is a really big part of me. I think that in my 20s, I worked out to be fit and fit into my jeans. In my 40s, I work out to be great in my 50s and 60s and for my mental health. I will wake up and say, like, if I want to, like with the Peloton, like if I tell myself I'm going to go work out, I kind of like, ugh, I like lose motivation in that space. Mm-hmm. If I tell myself I'm going to go listen to music, I'll get on the Peloton. Oh, you know, let me just zen out and listen to music. I'm not even going to break a sweat. I like lie to myself. You know, it's so funny because I know, like, I think this will people identify with this. I know once I'm done working out, those endorphins and that sweat and that real, you get into that meditation and you lose yourself. And it's like so powerful. Like the body looking good is such a byproduct. It has, it's like what it does to my mind and my spirit and how I navigate all of my other responsibilities is really so, exercise permeates all of those roles in such a positive way. But I have to kind of sometimes trick myself, and it's for my mental sanity. So I would say, you know, making sure, and I can't always push myself. I think, you know, we are such type A's, are like, especially if there's a lot of Americans on this call, you know, everything's got to be like, we got to have our personal best. We got to get on that bike and we've got to zoom it out and we've got to like power through and this and that. And I think I've really come to a space where sometimes my workouts just aren't as fabulous and they're just not as intense, but I still check the box and I still get it done because I know it's good for, you know, my mental game to say, you know what, I exercise. Like yesterday, I usually do like a 50 minute Zoom yoga class. I do actually Stone Harbor yoga, which anybody's listening, it's like the best. And I've tried everything. So I always, I encourage people to try that. But I wasn't, I was just not in, it was just one of those days, but I did enough, you know, and I like turned off my screen at like, I don't know, maybe 40, I would say like 80%. I did 80%. And I think that's like such a healthy way to live of like, okay, you know what? I'm okay. If I'm at 80% is better than zero. I think so many times it's a zero sum game. If you're not 100%, then you're zero. And I don't think that's a healthy way to live. Just show up sometimes and know you're not going to be 100%, but just always show up to mm-hmm. your mat, show up to your bike, show up to your walk, show up to your run, I don't know, swim, whatever you do, your bike, I don't know. So I think exercise for me is a non-negotiable. There's no question about it. It makes me a better person. And it does. Yes. It keeps me in my jeans. Thank you very much.
I love it. There's so much power in exercise, regardless of what it looks like. Even if you can, like you said, just get out and move your body.
Yeah.
It will do a world of a difference for your mental health and physically.
And you know, if anybody is listening that says, I hate exercise, I think you need to take that out of, again, change the conversation and rewrite it to say, fuck it. because your body needs it. Your kids are counting on it. It's the endorphins. Go get yourself some free endorphins, get some fresh air. Exercise doesn't mean you have to bring up your heart rate to 100 zillion minutes a minute. Stop being so American about it. Like, just move your body, stretch your body, that you're, you know, move through the universe. Just move. And you know, you don't hate exercise.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So Barbara, question for you. What do you have next coming up? Can you take a moment to kind of promote yourself and where people can find sure. you on social? And then also, what do you have next?
Well, I have a couple of shows coming up on all the New York stations. And then I have the National, which is the Today Show, coming up. I have a lot of fun segments for the summer that I think people are really going to love. They're fun and interactive and inexpensive. I'm relaunching my podcast, which had to take a time out because of COVID-19. My studio was shut down, but I pivoted and I'm back in. So I have my Bearing It All podcast, and I really love that. It's the grit behind the glamour of entrepreneurs, influencers, and celebrities.
Love it.
And I'm, you know, hopefully this summer working on a book. It's a big endeavor for me. It's you have to be raw and vulnerable, and really, I think to really write a book that impacts people, you have to be okay with being exposed and truthful. Like, it's really, I really identify with being authentic and being real, and you know, putting it on paper is going to be a big exploration for me. So let's hope that I can get to it, they say. You know, I only have my kids 50% of the time, and I'm hoping to use my time to share my story to help others. So that's where I'm at.
I love it. I love it so much. Barbara, thank you so much for coming on to share your story with us and sharing everything that you have about bucket, just asking and doing things that are out of your comfort zone. I think it was so important. And hopefully we can have you on the show again soon.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Love talking with you, Lauren, and bucket ass big.